Thanks for listening to the Herd Podcast. Be sure to catch us live every weekday from 12 to 3 Eastern, 9 to noon Pacific on Fox Sports Radio and FS1. Find your local station for the Herd at foxsportsradio.com or stream us live every day on the iHeartRadio app by searching Herd.
Now let's get this party started. You're listening to Fox Sports Radio.
It's a Thursday. Great to be here live in Los Angeles. It's the Herd. Wherever you may be and however you may be listening, iHeartRadio, Fox Sports Radio, FS1. So many things change in these playoff games. We had the MVP on the floor with a guy that couldn't get nominated for the MVP. Kind of obvious who the real MVP is, right? Joy Taylor is joining me today. We'll go to Green Bay. Jordan Love talking. I don't know why they didn't let him talk. It's fine. It's amazing. Let's put him in bubble wrap. Jordan Love talk. You're like, yeah, sounds good to me. Ready to go. And then he also played very well yesterday. So we'll go to the Packers practice live to hear from a guy. We don't know. We've been calling him the Loch Ness Monster. We got like a grainy piece of footage on Jordan Love last year. I mean, we're like, can we just get a little piece of footage? So it could be a monster. It could be scary. It could be nothing. We don't know about Jordan Love. It's all just guessing. But it looked like yesterday, he can talk, he can throw, he can run. It's very exciting.
Well, maybe the pressure's on after all.
So we'll go to Green Bay. Very exciting. Like I always say, Joy and I do not root for bad quarterback play. Ever.
No. I want everyone to be competitive.
We would love Aaron goes to Denver, they win. Jordan's a star, they win. Two more good teams to talk about. Perfect. Let's start with the NBA game, though, last night. You know I'm a Chris Paul fan. And I think I have a soft spot in my heart for people who have overcome stuff. You know, the other day we were walking around the neighborhood and my wife says to me, I don't understand how, like, you see a 20-year-old and they own these homes. And I said, well, that's daddy's money or mommy's money. I said, I don't resent them, but I don't respect them. Big difference. You live in my neighborhood and you're 20, you didn't buy that house. And my point is, yeah, believe it or not, I have a nice neighborhood. The point is, this is why I respect Chris Paul so much. This is why I love Chris Paul. These things I'm about to read all happened to Chris Paul. He was drafted by the New Orleans Hornets. Remember them? Yeah. Due to Hurricane Katrina, he could not play his first 2 years there. They had to play in Oklahoma City. I don't know. Sounds kind of disruptive. They ended up winning. Then he got traded to the Lakers. Oh, no, the league stepped in. Can't do that. But we will allow you to be traded to the worst owner in the league and the worst team, the Clippers. And they won there. He was then traded to Houston, which has had all sorts of dysfunction, and they won there, 65 games, in fact, and he had the worst break. Literally, he got hurt, leading the dynasty 3-2 Western Conference Finals. Then he was traded to Oklahoma City. They were tanking. And he's like, I'll make it work. And then he got traded to Phoenix. I hope you guys remember what Phoenix was like a year ago and a year before that and before that and before that. Bad owner, Robert Sarver, worst franchise in the league for 5 years, winning percentage. And he's now winning there. I mean, I love Kawhi Leonard, but he inherited Tim Duncan and Manu Ginobili and Tony Parker and a great owner and Greg Popovich. I love Magic Johnson, but he inherited, you know, Kareem. Chris Paul has dealt with natural disasters, awful owners, tanking franchises, injuries at the worst time. And what I'm about to tell you, you're not going to believe. He has a higher regular season winning percentage than Kobe Bryant and Steph Curry and Kevin Durant. No wonder Chris Paul is a spokesman for State Farm. He's always got stuff happening to him, but he's the best insurance in the league. You get him, you win. But Colin, he has no titles. Titles. The fact that he hasn't quit is amazing. I mean, there's guys drafted in his draft class, they've just given up the league, and they could still play. Well, he doesn't have titles. Folks, if you grow up in an abusive house, poor. The expectations change. We don't expect you to be number one in your class in Yale and a billionaire. If you can be married and happy and get a college degree and be a good neighbor and a good human being and raise kids, you are a gold standard American. The fact that winning titles, Donald Sterling, Hurricane Katrina, the tanking Thunder, the awful Suns, and he's here. This MJ's got no titles without Scottie Pippen. I want you to think about this. As great as Kobe Bryant is, Kobe Bryant inherited, he got Phil Jackson, the best coach ever, Jerry Buss, arguably the best NBA owner ever. He's on a short list. Jerry West, arguably the best GM ever. Shaq, modern day best center ever. One franchise, total stability. Chris Paul's got a higher regular season winning percentage. I don't want to hear about playoffs. Chris Paul, it's not realistic to ask Chris Paul to be knocking down hoisting trophies. He's got a higher winning percentage in the regular season than Kobe, KD, and Steph Curry. And that's why I've got a soft spot for Chris Paul. 16 years, and this cat can't get a break. He has had to make everything work. Every single year, tanking, hurricanes, Donald Sterling, the Suns mess, the tanking Thunder. Does everybody understand that? When you grow up in instability and then are traded to instability, look at Chris Paul's career. It's insane for 16 years, and he doesn't get nominated for an MVP. You know, in Hollywood, they give those lifetime achievement awards. That's what Chris Paul deserves. And ask yourself this in Hollywood, because those are stars too, right? NBA, we always say it's like Hollywood stars. Give me a list. Do you know off the top of your head an actor or actress that has had a career of bad scripts, bad directors, and bad supporting casts? You don't, because you can't overcome that. Those actors are out of Hollywood. They're waiters. You can't overcome that. There are no great actors that have gotten a series of 16 years of bad scripts, bad directors, bad producers, no funding, and bad supporting cast. You don't know them because they don't exist. That's Chris Paul's career. Couldn't get nominated for the MVP. Was on the floor with the MVP last night. Chris Paul completely controlled the game. Denver's got no answers for him. They can't do anything. He controls the tempo, the pace. He's as good a defensive guard as the league has, outside of maybe Ben Simmons, who's 7 inches taller. I'll just say it. I got a soft spot for people who have to overcome. And what Chris Paul's done for 16 years in this league, man, the fact that he hasn't quit is remarkable. All right, so Jordan Love, we'll have sound later. It was a big day. He's talking and he's playing well. But I was reading a story this morning about the real mess in Green Bay is a PR battle. And Mark Murphy said this week, the fans are divided in Green Bay. Folks, it doesn't matter if they're divided. It doesn't matter. There is one issue here. I'll get to that in a second. It doesn't matter if the fans are divided. But Colin, the Packer fans own the team. No, they don't. No, they don't. That's the tooth fairy of pro sports ownership in America. It says on the certificate, it's got no value and it's non-transferable. The fans own the team assumption in Green Bay. They don't. If you can't sell something, then you don't own something. You don't own the team. It has as much value as that employee of the month plaque you won 24 years ago when you were in high school, paying your way to parties, right? You worked at Burger King, got an employee of the month plaque. That's what that plaque means. Who cares if the fans are divided? It doesn't mean anything. This is not about a PR battle. This is all about if Jordan Love can play. If he can, the PR battle is irrelevant. Let's say it is about the PR battle, and Mark Murphy wins it, the president of the Packers. He wins the PR battle. Aaron holds out. Aaron holds out, and the fans are, "You stink, Aaron! We love Mark Murphy!" And he wins the PR battle. And Aaron holds out and doesn't play, and Jordan Love stinks. Slow clap. What does Mark Murphy win with that? a third place trophy in the NFC North? He wins nothing. If Mark Murphy ticks off every fan who thinks they own the team, but they really don't, in Green Bay, he trades Aaron Rodgers for 3 firsts, and Jordan Love, by about October, is slicing it and dicing it, he wins. This is all about Jordan Love. It's really no longer about Aaron Rodgers. It's not about Aaron Rodgers anymore. Aaron's leaving eventually, now or later. This story is all about Jordan Love. Yesterday was a very good day. He was composed, speaking, very composed, very confident, and he was very good on the field. Yesterday was as good a day as Green Bay has had in the offseason. Yesterday, this whole franchise now, who gives a rip about PR? It is about, it's not even about Aaron Rodgers. It's not about Mark Murphy. It's about Jordan Love. Dude can play, everything's solved. And yesterday was a great day if you're a Packer fan. Because he stepped up to the podium and he answered questions about Aaron, had to kind of walk around that little landmine field. He was great. And he practiced. Oh, he's really great. PR is irrelevant. Mark Murphy's irrelevant. Aaron Rodgers at this point isn't that relevant because he's leaving. We got a divorce here, right? We know the divorce is coming. It's now or a year. Aaron's not going to be here in 4 years. Aaron could be on Jeopardy in 4 weeks. So the PR stuff is completely overrated. Don't believe any story that says that. Jordan Love has the future of the Packers. It's in his arm. That's all this is about. All right. Let me see what I got here. Dak Prescott has done well for himself. He just signed on with the Jordan brand. Has there ever been an athlete coming off a serious injury while not playing signs a mega contract and a massive, massive endorsement deal? Good for Dak. All right. It's coming up.
Be sure to catch live editions of The Herd weekdays at noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific on Fox Sports Radio, FS1, and the iHeartRadio app.
Good things come to those who wait at Jersey Mike's. They also come to those who don't. Download the app, order ahead, skip the line now through June 20th. Use the code THEHERD for $1 off your order. So, you know, I'm often critical of athletes. I'm very hard on quarterbacks. And I say this before. I'm not a big, you know, the Wonderlic doesn't really matter, except for quarterbacks. I do want to know cognitively if you're quick, because the world moves real fast at quarterback. And I think you should, as a general manager, have a right to ask really uncomfortable questions when you're drafting a quarterback. I want to know about his mom and his dad. I want to know about his childhood. Some of those questions, to me, feel off limits for anybody else. But this is the quarterback, and NFL franchises are worth $4, 5, 6, and $7 billion. And I'm going to have to change coaches to fit you. I mean, in Baltimore, I mean, they have a coaching staff, Greg Roman, built for Lamar Jackson. Lamar leaves, they'll probably get a different coach. Like, and that's why they get paid a lot of money, and I am all here for it. But I've always said, even in college football, I think kids should be able to transfer. But if I ran the NCAA, I would have a rule that quarterbacks could transfer once. Because if a quarterback transfers out of Oregon, Auburn, Virginia Tech, Alabama, and then another one does the same day, can't have a football team without a quarterback. We can be thin at running back, thin at wide receiver, thin at tight end. I've got to have a quarterback. Who do I snap the ball to? There is a burden of responsibility on a quarterback. And if they're not mature, I make a living out of ripping them. I spent a lot of time on Baker and Johnny Manziel and Jameis Winston. But it's also, to be fair, as a radio TV host, I need to be fair and to compliment quarterbacks who do have it. It's no fair if I'm just here banging on guys who lack it. We should take time to credit people who have it. And that's Dak Prescott. Dak Prescott, from day one in this league, always understood the value of the moment. First time at a podium. It's like, man. A Dallas Cowboy podium is not a Jaguar podium. A Dallas Cowboy podium is not a Seahawk podium. The Dallas Cowboy podium is the biggest podium in the league with the most eyeballs. Dallas has more fans out of its area code than any franchise in the league. And from day one, Dak got it. Dak has emotionally, viscerally connected from day one with Jerry and Stephen Jones, the teammates, fans, advertisers. Dak Prescott, and this is unbelievable, off an injury where we don't know how good he'll be, signed a $200-plus million contract, and according to this story by Adam Schefter, signed a five-year agreement with the Jordan brand. He'll be the only quarterback in the league represented by it, and the Cowboys, the highest-paid NFL player on the Jordan brand roster. We haven't seen him play since he broke his ankle. This illustrates why I rip quarterbacks who aren't ready. Because Dak is the example of what happens to you when you are. Dak doesn't have a top 15 arm in this league. Dan Mullen came on his show. Dan Mullen had him in college. Loves him. He's like, yeah, we liked his leadership. It was the arm thing we were hung up on. And then he came back and it was better, but it still wasn't very good. Dak's never had a big arm. He's never been the best athlete, the biggest quarterback, the best arm. But Dak, and this is why in the end, a lot of people argue he's worth the money. He's embraced Cowboy tradition. He embraced the pressure. He embraced the moment. He understood the temperature in the room. He didn't fight it. There is such value. Dak is what agents all across America should tell quarterbacks. That agents should look at Dak Prescott and go to their quarterback and go, you want to know how to do this game? Being quarterback's a little bit of a game inside a game, right? Like, just call Dak Prescott. I'll set you up a meeting with his agent, and you just talk to him. Because that's how you do it. He's not as good as Russell Wilson. He doesn't throw it like Aaron Rodgers. He's not as big and strong as Josh Allen. He's not as fast as Lamar Jackson. He's going to be the highest-paid player, Jordan Brand. For a minute, he's the highest-paid player in the league. Leadership matters. Grown-up matters. Good at the podium matters. Embracing tradition matters. By the way, Twitter hated when he stood for the anthem. The organization didn't. 22% of America's on Twitter. Don't play to it. 6% actually use it. He's not always done the popular thing, the cool thing, the lit thing. Not always done that. He's not always done that. He's not a sellout either. Because you know how it is now. If you don't play to Twitter, you're a sellout. Seems to me Dak's selling everything out. He's selling his shoes out. He's selling everything out. It's okay sometimes to put your arm around tradition, be a grown-up, not be cool, not play to Twitter. Dak Prescott is how you play the game beyond the game at quarterback. The fact he gets this contract and his contract off a broken leg is incredible. So it just speaks volumes of what he is as a dude. Like, by the way, we've heard funny stories through the years about Jerry Jones doesn't give out money. Michael Irvin tells the old El Paso story. Remember Michael Irvin said, I want to be paid this. And Jerry said, you ever been to El Paso? He goes, Texas? He goes, no, your contract. I'm El Paso. I'll pass on that contract. I'm not paying it. Jerry's a tough negotiator. He paid Dak. Not because he has the best arm. Joy with the news.
No.
Turn on the news.
This is the Herdline News.
Well, let's head over to that other team in Texas, the Texans. Deshaun Watson's future with the Texans is in limbo. But if he were to be traded, he apparently has a certain destination in mind. Former teammate Kareem Jackson told Aqib Talib on his Catch and Fades podcast that Watson has his eyes set on playing for the Broncos.
Yeah, I got a great relationship with Deshaun. I've been talking to him the last couple of weeks, man, and like all he's been telling me is like, look, Jack, just tell him like, come that's where me. I want to be. Like he like that's where I want to be. He like, man, listen, that's why he like I want to be in Denver.
The Watson trade conversation pretty much got shut down once all of the allegations came out.
Right.
So this was a bit of news yesterday, just hearing anything about Deshaun Watson and certainly anything about the trade possibility, because we did know that there were a few destinations that he was interested in.
Yeah.
Denver has become like the hot spot now.
Well, they've got really good players. I mean, I think players...
It's not an ideal division.
No, but generally great athletes want to compete. So I mean, I think they great athletes want to play. Great athletes don't worry about the competition. They worry about, can I fit? And I think we've said this for years. What's disappointing about Drew Lock is this team's ready to win. If you put Aaron or Deshaun in this thing, this is not a Drew Lock doesn't have support. Their offensive line last year, their left tackle was a Pro Bowler. They've got really good backs. They've drafted a receiver well.
Yeah.
Fant, the tight end, is excellent. Now, their defense was bad, especially at corner, but they appear to have solved that. Kyle Fuller from Chicago, and they drafted a corner. So Patrick Surtain from Alabama. So
They have a great quarterback tradition.
I mean, great fans. They have an altitude advantage early in the year. They always have. It's one of the best September winning percentages last 30 years. So I think fans may not look at Denver, but I think players look at Denver and think they got dudes. They got dudes. They got an old pass rusher, Von Miller. They got a new pass rusher, Bradley Chubb.
Well, I mean, everyone that plays in Denver loves it, and it's a great organization, a great fan base, and great city. I'm not saying it from that perspective. I'm just saying, like, for Aaron Rodgers to end up in Denver, you're in a tough division now. Like, he's still obviously in his prime, but that's a harder division to win than the one that you're currently in.
Not even close.
And then, I mean, AFC South is a completely different conversation. So I think that's the most ideal place you want to be in if you're a high level quarterback. But obviously you're with the Texans, which are a completely dysfunctional organization. So that matters as well. I think Denver is a great destination for a quarterback. I'm just looking at it as you have to win your division first. So if you're going to preferred spaces, you have to look at it from that perspective as well as what you're going to have around you. So Giants running back Saquon Barkley says he's doing well with his ACL rehab, but he doesn't want to put a timetable on his return just yet. So he said, you know me, I'm going to take it one day at a time, just come in with my head down, ready to work. I'm going to be whenever my body tells me I'm ready, I'm able to show everyone I'm ready again. That's when I'm going to be able to go out there and hopefully be elite what I was before, but even better. He suffered a torn ACL as well as an MCL and meniscus damage last season in week 2 against the Bears.
It's an interesting division. I was looking at the Fox Bet over-unders on this division, and they go in line. Dallas is favored at 9.5 wins. No, wait. Dallas, is it Dallas 8.5 or 9.5? Washington's 8.5. Dallas 9.5. Washington 8.5. Giants 7.5. Eagles 6.5. Eagles under to me is the best bet in the division. Everything else after that depends on injuries. I do think the Giants actually, Dave Gettleman has solved some of their issues. They went big into free agency, which I don't love, but the good thing what the Giants did, they have surrounded Daniel Jones with so many good players, there's no excuses.
Yeah, that's why I don't have a problem with them going big in free agency. Yeah. You have to find out what you have in Daniel Jones. I think he has something, and one of the rules on this show is that we'll know by Thanksgiving if we're going to stick with Daniel Jones or not.
You'll know if he's good.
Which I think is fair. I think getting Saquon back will be a massive part of that. I think Saquon is the juice and the soul of this team, especially on offense. So, we're not sure if he's going to be ready at the beginning of the season. Season opener's September 12th against the Broncos. Hopefully he'll be available. If he's not available at the opener, he'll be available at the beginning of the season. But the Giants are just such an interesting team to me this year. Like, I really want to see, and I think they're going to be a lot better than people think that they are.
Well, there's always a team in this league. I mean, our entire life, every single year, there's a team that pops, and we didn't see it coming. Like, we know Minnesota is going to be better than last year. Like, Minnesota's
the injuries were ridiculous.
So they won 5 or some games. We know they'll be better. But there's always a team that pops, and you look up and you're like, wow. And it would not shock me in December if it's the Giants. They have that kind of – their defense is great. That we like their coach. I mean, like, by the way, Miami last year was the team that we looked up and went, oh, my God, they're 10-6. Like – I guess there's
always a team that we think is going to be great that completely falls off. So the Blazers recently let go of head coach Terry Stotts. Some names have been thrown around about potential hires, but one person who has apparently expressed interest is Nets assistant coach Mike D'Antoni. He joined the Nets after a 4-year run as the Rockets head coach. D'Antoni's currently 20th all-time in wins. I don't know if I love D'Antoni to the Blazers.
Yeah, offense is not their problem. He does. They need defense. Like he's just more of what they have.
And I do think D'Antoni will get another coaching job.
Yeah.
It's not that. I don't know that that's where they need the enhancements. When the Blazers don't have a problem scoring points, their system with that is fine. Chauncey Billups is favored right now to get the job at minus 200, according to Fox Bet. Sam Cassell, Juwan Howard, Dave Yoger at plus 550, and David Vanderpool at plus 700 are the odds on Fox Bet right now. Chauncey Billups is very interesting as well.
Now, Chauncey's been a broadcaster.
He's an assistant coach with the Clippers right now.
I was going to say, he's never been a head coach. Yeah, he's been an assistant. Yeah, Chauncey would be good because he was a grinder, and that's what the team needs.
Yeah,
they don't grind like much on the defensive end.
Yeah.
Joy with the news.
Well, that's the news.
And thanks for stopping by.
The Herd Line News.
Speaking of that, Rick Bucher, sponsored by Mercedes-Benz, the best or nothing, now joins us. Speaking of Portland, by the way, D'Antoni and Damian Lillard, I was thinking, if you're Dame Lillard and you're watching the Suns last night and you couldn't beat Denver without Jamal Murray and the Suns are rolling him and the Suns have a bunch of young players only getting better, I was like, oh, how discouraging for Dame Lillard. When you talk to people around the NBA, I mean, Dame just signed an extension. Is Dame a Blazer next year? I mean, what is the feeling you get? By the way, I don't even know who suggested this. It may have been Chris Mannix who came out and said, should they consider moving him and just kind of restarting? And because you could get so much for Dame. What is your take on him today?
I haven't heard anything that would suggest that Damian Lillard is going to leave Portland at this point. There are some changes that need to be made and improvements over the summer, but this is so much a part of who Damian Lillard is in terms of the guy who's staying with a franchise, who has taken a small market, and he's built, not that brand is everything, at some point you have to win, but Damian Lillard has developed quite a presence and a personality by being the best player in a small market that's never come close to winning a championship.
Yeah.
If he goes anyplace else, a lot of what we think of Damian Lillard ultimately changes. He is loyalty personified, and he's the little guy who continues to try personified. If he goes anyplace else, number one, it's not a guarantee if he's going to have a better chance at winning a championship that he's necessarily the number one. And then that changes the entire dynamic. So I haven't heard anything from Damian or Damian's camp or anybody else in the NBA that would suggest at this point that Damian is looking to get out of Portland. And I assure you this, unless Damian Lillard wants out of Portland, the Blazers are not going to move him just to rework things. Because while we can look at whether they've had success or not, the possibility of getting another Damian Lillard of that brand, that personality, that leadership would be far, far more difficult than I think people suggest. This idea, let's just go back and let's start over. The Portland Trailblazers feel very fortunate that they've had a Damian Lillard that has been as devoted to them as he has been over all these years.
A year ago, he was the face of the league. Giannis now looks like a liability late in games. I can't even remember, you know, and it's interesting. But let's say, I mean, Brooklyn, I mean, let's say again tonight he shoots 50% from the free throw line. He only shoots 33% beyond 3 feet. I don't remember a player who went from here, from MVP face of the league to, wow, you can't win if he's a one. What are people now, I mean, if they get rolled in this series and lose in 4 or 5, does it just change how we view Giannis? Like, just completely change how we view him?
It's not how I view him because, look, he wasn't my MVP the previous 2 years for this very reason. And it was for the first time this season where I saw him operating in the mid-range and taking mid-range shots and making mid-range shots with confidence. And I can't shake out of my head what I saw between the Brooklyn Nets and the Milwaukee Bucks, between Kevin Durant and Giannis Antetokounmpo. It was a old-fashioned shootout between the two, and Giannis ultimately won the battle. Now, that's regular season, and the postseason is different. What I don't get and what I don't see from the Milwaukee Bucks is a connection between Mike Budenholzer and Giannis Antetokounmpo in terms of how they were going to approach the game. I didn't see him operating for the most part in the mid post or in the pinch post below the free throw line. That's where he has to operate. This idea that he has to shoot threes, I don't want Giannis Antetokounmpo operating above the three-point line, honestly, any more than I want LeBron James giving me a steady diet of that. I need my big, nearly seven-foot playmaker to be operating below the free throw line. And that's what has really astonished me in this series so far, is that we have not seen that. And when we have seen it, Giannis hasn't been as good there as he was in the regular season. So I'm not giving up on Giannis or the Bucks in terms of this series. They have a lot of work to do, but I can't put, look, if I'm going to look at Giannis and say that he's not carrying the water in this series, then don't I have to look at the reigning MVP in Nikola Jokic and suggest that he's not doing the same against the Phoenix Suns? Some guys, first of all, if you're playing big, and I think Giannis, for the most part, has to play big, they have to play him at the five to win the series. That's what they did during the regular season. Then you're dependent on the pieces around you to get the ball where you need it. And you also need your coach designing plays that are going to put you in the right spot. And I haven't seen any of that from the Milwaukee Bucks.
So it is. I'm watching Chris Paul last night, and he has a higher regular season win percentage than KD, Steph, and Kobe Bryant. He actually does. And he's inherited a natural disaster, Donald Sterling, a tanking franchise. I mean, a lot of dysfunction, chaos his whole career, and he just keeps overcoming it. And I sit and I think to myself, and this league won't. He's like the Russell Wilson in the NFL who can't get an MVP vote. I watched him last night in that game, totally controls the game. 50, I mean, no turnovers. I don't even know. I'm trying to think of a comp for Chris Paul of a player that is so clearly running a franchise, running a conference, head and shoulders, and we give him no respect. I don't know if there's a comp out there, but I'm watching him with Jokic, and Jokic is the MVP. Chris can't get nominated, and it's night and day. One is totally controlling the series, and one is just really talented. That's my takeaway on the series so far.
And that's a pretty good one, I would say. It's also, you point out something that I think is important, which is it always helps a leader when he's walking into a disaster zone. People are far more willing to listen. What do we need to do? What we need to go get water? Do we, like, where are the rations? That's what Chris Paul inherited. He inherited a Phoenix Suns team that is incredibly hungry, one, to have a leader, and two, to have that leader show them exactly what they need to do. I also believe, to my point about the coach-player relationship, like Monty Williams and Chris Paul are from the same DNA. They're connected, and I see that in the way that they communicate. So he has the benefit of that. But the other element with Chris Paul, and we're into analytics big time, one of the things that we do not seem to appreciate anymore is assist-to-turnover ratio. You never hear anybody talking about that.
Yeah.
Maybe in part because if you look at Jokic or Luka Doncic or LeBron James, the assist-to-turnover ratio is not very good. Guys are throwing a lot of dimes. Russell Westbrook's throwing a lot of dimes. You look at the assist-to-turnover ratio, it's not great. One steady element is that Chris Paul has always had a tremendous assist-to-turnover ratio. And it doesn't necessarily mean that he's the greatest passer. What it means is the ball is secure in his hands,
yeah.
And more often than not, you're going to get a chance to score when the ball is in his hands rather than something that's going to send it the other way before you even get a shot off. 10 years ago, he was leading the league in assist-to-turnover ratio. You look at the top 10 this year, he's the only name of any significance. I believe he finished fourth. Tyus Jones led the league in assist-to-turnover ratio. You want to go through James Harden, LeBron James, Luka Doncic. Most of those guys are not even in the top 50. That matters, and it matters especially in the postseason, and it's why Chris Paul is having the great impact that he has.
Rick Bucher, it's great seeing you, man. Appreciate it. Thanks for stopping by.
You got it.
Yeah, the assist in basketball doesn't get love because it's usually followed by points, and we talk about the scorer, not the guy who passed it. And so Magic Johnson was rare, but because he was flashier and more fun than the sky hook from Kareem. But generally speaking, if you go look at the top 20 all-time college basketball assist leaders, Gary Payton's about the only one you've heard of. we don't financially pay the assist leader. We don't reward the assist leader. Basketball doesn't appreciate the assist guy. And to Rick's point, the assist turnover ratio, last night he had like 11, 12 assists. He had no turnovers. I mean, Chris Paul's the quarterback that doesn't have the best arm, but he never throws an interception. Like, he just, the ball's totally controlled. He controls the tempo. I mean, you got Jokic on the floor and Chris Paul. One guy's really talented. The other guy controls the whole game. The tempo, the clock, the everything. Chris Paul controls the whole game. More thoughts on that coming up.
Be sure to catch live editions of The Herd weekdays at noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific.
Hey, I'm Doug Gottlieb. The podcast is called All Ball. We usually talk all basketball all the time, but it's more about the stories about what made these people love their sport and all the interesting interactions along the way. We talk to coaches. We talk to players. We tell you stories. You download it. You listen to it. I think you'll like it. Listen to All Ball with Doug Gottlieb on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
You know, one of the things about Chris Paul that's amazing, he was only 83rd in the NBA this year in shot attempts at about 12 a game. Westbrook's career average is almost double that. Basketball is a very unique sport. If I succeed, I'm taking from you. It doesn't work that way in the NFL. If Patrick Mahomes throws a touchdown pass to Travis Kelce, Patrick Mahomes gets a touchdown pass, he'll get paid for that. Travis Kelce gets the touchdown catch, he'll get paid for that. And if the left tackle blocks sufficiently, every player gets graded in football on every play, he'll get paid for that. For plays to work in football, almost 10 of 11 or 11 of 11 have to do their job. And every play is graded. So you get a lot of people get paid. If Patrick Mahomes throws a touchdown pass, there's winners everywhere. But if I'm James Harden and I dribble around, I'm very ball-centric, and I take a shot and I score, I'm taking a shot and points from Kyrie Irving. Well, he passes the ball, assists. You don't get paid in the NBA for assists. They don't pay you for screens and assists. They pay you for points. And basketball is very unique that way. You are taking when you succeed. You are taking from somebody else. Football is the ultimate team sport. We all win. If we all do our job, we not only all win, we're all graded, and we can all be paid off one play. The tackle, they're going to look at that film and go, oh, look at that tackle. That was great. We got to sign him to an extension. So, but there's this thing in basketball where we just celebrate points. That's all we care about. There has not been a scoring champ that's won an NBA title in 20 years. Now, Michael Jordan did it 6 times, but he was also a great defender. But if you start celebrating scores, Bradley Beal, playoffs, Melo, Harden, Westbrook, Iverson, McGrady, great scores. They're takers. They're not givers. That's where Chris Paul is special. He's a giver. He only shoots 12 shots a game. Westbrook shoots 24. And players keep track of that stuff. So when Chris Paul, he can get his 16 a night, but he has 12 assists. He doesn't take a lot of shots. So efficiency matters. Volume shooters, in the end, are taking from teammates. And basketball is unique that way. In football, nobody resents the quarterback making money. Aaron Rodgers is loved by all those guys. Why? Because if Aaron's winning the MVP, that means Davante Adams has 10 touchdowns and 90 catches. That means David Bakhtiari, the left tackle. If Aaron's winning the MVP, they're not letting the left tackle go. I can tell you that. So we accentuate how much points mean. When the data tells you that great scorers do not win championships because they're takers, high-volume scorers are takers, Iverson and Westbrook. Now, you say, well, what about Michael Jordan? Again, he's the exception, and he was also the best defensive player, so Michael was taking and giving. He was giving you great defense, he was taking away their points, and he was scoring, and Michael was so much better than 99.9% of the league, nobody argued it. But I think this is one of the things that we don't appreciate about Chris Paul. He is the rare star that is a giver, not a taker. And that is hard. And that accentuates, that's the Dak Prescott gene, which is leadership, good on the floor, controls the tempo, controls the pace. You'll find very few star quarterbacks in the NFL who people resent. They're almost always loved. Troy Aikman could yell and scream at Cowboys. They love Troy. Because if you win, everybody gets paid in football. But But in basketball, why do dynasties last longer in football than basketball? It should be the other way around because football players get hurt. So dynasties should not last very long in football. You have a couple good teams and guys get hurt. But in basketball, they never last. Why? Because of ego. Why? Because everybody's losing except the two stars on that team. Because the stars are taking all the shots and getting all the points, and that means they're taking. That's why I say with Brooklyn, it's not going to last long if they win this year. Because in the end, Harden now is giving a lot more than he's ever given. He's become assist guy. He'll do that for a short term, but James Harden's one of the great scorers in the last 20 years. He's not going to become a giver for a seven-year period. And basketball, in that regard, is a very, very unique sport. Well, what about the assist? John Stockton has a zillion assists. How often do we talk about him on the show? We don't. Go look at the top 20 assist guys, history of college basketball. Gary Payton, maybe Bobby Hurley. By the way, Doug Gottlieb's on that list. Gary Payton's the one you've heard of because he could score and play defense. All right, our number two, we will go to Green Bay today. Jordan Love is talking. He's practicing, and he looks fantastic. That's news. Hour two, live in L.A., it's The Herd.